This is Jen.
This is Kelsey.
And you're listening to the first 50 pages.
What is the scariest book that you've read? We've been asking everyone this question this month. And really, who better to ask than the staff at the Sioux City Public Library? Of course, they had some frightfully fun books to share.
Hi, I'm Helen Rigdon, and I'm the director here at the Sioux City Public Library. And the book that has scared me the most would be The Stand by Stephen King. The reason that book scares me is because it could probably really happen, because it is like a flu epidemic, kind of a post-apocalyptic book that kind of wipes out the majority of the population, and then it's an epic battle of good versus evil. So it's a long read, but it is one scary read.
My name is Lacey Fullerton, and the story I'm talking about today is actually a short story by Edgar Allan Poe. It is called The Cask of Amontillado. It's one of his better known stories, but not as famous as obviously like Mask of the Red Death or The Telltale Heart. What I have always liked about the story is it's very psychological. It's one of those ones that just kind of gets creepier and darker as the story goes on. I'll have to spoil it for everybody because it's hard not to, but at the end of the story you have two people that are supposedly friends, but one of them is the villain. He doesn't like the other person in the story, and he's kind of leading him down a dark path, giving him ways to get out, but also leading him kind of deeper and darker, literally, in this kind of basement dungeon. It is kind of hard to describe exactly what's scary about it, other than it just seems like very real. It's something that could kind of happen to anyone, even though the story takes place, I believe, in the 1500s or 1600s. It's something that you could see happening nowadays. Kind of less on like the demonic side of things, but more about the true evil of humanity, I guess, is maybe a good way to put the story. But I definitely recommend reading it, and it's not super long, so you don't have to dedicate a lot of time.
This is Sarah, and my scariest experience with a book was in 1974, and my last experience reading In Cold Blood. I was babysitting on the second floor of a big old house, and the kids were asleep. I started the book and finished the book that night, and I've never picked up a scary book since.
I'm Sarah Lees. I'm the operations manager here at the library, and I don't tend to read a lot of scary stories, but one I read recently that has really haunted me was The Long Walk by Stephen King, writing as Richard Bachman, and it was just very atmospheric. You feel like you're on the walk with the boys. And it's just the story is basically where 100 teenage boys have to go on this really long walk, and you get three warnings if you stop walking and you don't want to get to the final warning. It's terrifying, and yet it's not, you know, gory. It's not really in your face in that way, but it's just nerve-wracking. So that's the one I would recommend.
The story that I thought was really scary was when I read Amityville Horror by the author Jay Anson, because it was based on a true story. And what scared me was I kept waiting for the pig with the glowing red eyes to show up in my bedroom window.
I am Sarah Enright, and my favorite scary book is probably Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. And I loved that as a kid, and I loved all things Halloween and creepy. But when I got older, I tried to read In Cold Blood by Truman Capote, and it was so scary I had to stop. And I think it's because the thought of people coming into your house and that it was a real story and it was true, I just couldn't go on with it. So that, I can't say it's my favorite, but that turned me away from reading scary books.
My name is Angie Beck. It's a poem by Edgar Allan Poe. I heard it in elementary school. It's The Girl with the Black Velvet Ribbon. And after I heard that and her head hit the floor, I've never liked scary books, movies, ever again.
My name is Jody Klecki. I work here at the Sioux City Public Library as a communication specialist. The book that I remember making an impact on me as I think it was probably third or fourth grade, and it was a chapter book. And so I don't remember a lot about the details of the story, but I do remember. So the book is called Christina's Ghost by Betty Wren Wright. And I actually looked up the book too, and I found this little quote on the cover that says, "What is the mystery the ghost wants her to solve?" Which brought back some memories. But what I remember still to this day about Christina's ghost are the footsteps, the ghost's footsteps on the stairs. And all I remember is thinking, you have to get out, move faster. So it definitely made an impression. Even so many years later, I won't tell you how many years ago third grade was, but I still remember.
My name is Marla Kerr, and I work at the Sioux City Public Library. And one of the books that I found scary is Annihilation by Jeff Vandermeer. Wasn't really scary, it's a little more disconcerting. There's an area of the world called Area X where is uninhabitable, and everything in that area dies or gets changed into some other bizarre type creature, you know, science fiction. And the book Annihilation's on the 12th expedition, four women go into that area, and one of them is a biologist. She's telling it from her point of view, and things happen to her where she breathes in some spores, and you know, it affects everybody on the expedition differently, and they're all kind of psychologically twisted up by this, or some of them have different physical manifestations where they come back as somebody different and then they die of cancer. So it's a little disconcerting, and the Area X is kind of taking over the whole world, and you don't know, you know, where the story's going to go and how these people are going to end up, you know, what they're going to turn into. Some of them turned into bizarre creatures.
My name is Angie C. Walson, and the book that really scared me, I read it when I was in the fourth grade, and it was called The Dollhouse Murders by Betty Wren Wright. I had nightmares for weeks after reading this book because it's about a dollhouse that they find, these teens find in an attic of their house, and it's the exact replica of their home. But murders are taking place in there, similar to what happened earlier in their home. That's the book that scared me the most when I was young.
My name's Adrienne Dunn. I'm the Youth Services Manager at the Sioux City Public Library. Today, the book that I would like to talk about is from the book entitled The Sneetches and Other Stories by Dr. Seuss. I personally feel that every person, no matter how old or young, can experience the thrill of the unknown, which I think is what a lot of scary or spooky books hold. So for me, the story that's in this is What Was I Scared Of? Which is the mystery of what even is this thing I'm afraid of. For me, I read this as a child, and I would read it to myself over and over again, and I found it both spooky and, unlike many adult novels at this time, it has a happy ending, not to give it away. But this is one of the pages that I enjoy reading when I was a kid, and also now to my kids and other kids here at the library when they're looking for a little something, a little spooky. I said, I do not fear those pants with nobody inside them. I said and said and said those words. I said them, but I lied them. Throughout life, I think that myself. You're kind of giving yourself a little pep talk, and even though you are scared and you move through things, and that's what happens in this story.
I'm Carol Harder, and the book that I wanted to talk about is one of my favorites that I've recently read. It's called Rolling in the Deep, and it's a novella by Mira Grant, who writes a lot of horror books and, you know, especially zombie. She has a zombie series. And Rolling in the Deep is about a documentary crew that goes out into the Pacific Ocean to the Mariana Trench to see if they can find some solid evidence that mermaids exist. And they take along some scientists, you know, interns, a mermaid troupe of women that dress as mermaids to get footage that would maybe look kind of authentic, but what they didn't realize was they were going to find mermaids, and the mermaids they found had teeth. So the full-length novel takes place 7 years after the first voyage happened, which all the crew members and the people aboard were lost and no sign of the ship at all. And so in the full-length novel, then some of their loved ones and other scientists come to see if they can figure out what happened.
Sienna Guy, book was Amityville Horror by Jay Anson. So that book just scared me from the front to the back, and I can't remember exactly what in particular scared me, but I remember my mom came in to tell me to go to bed as I was only 16,
and I fell off my bed as she opened up the door. So yeah, pretty scary.
My name is Brenda Lushier, and my book is The Terror by Dan Simmons. And it's actually a book that there was just a TV show that came out that's based on it. I have not watched the TV show, but I did really enjoy the book. It is about these two ships from England, the HMS Erebus and the HMS Terror, that go to the Arctic up by above Canada, kind of. They're looking for the Northwest Passage. And they actually get stuck in the ice up there. And so while they're stuck in the ice is actually crushing the ships. All of their food goes bad, and they start having to eat people that are dying, and all this like crazy stuff is happening. And then something keeps coming out of the night and taking things from their ship, or they'll find someone dead in the morning, or like, I don't know, it was just really suspenseful. But I really like it, and I read it a couple years ago, and it's still kind of stuck in my head. I also read it during the winter, and in the book they're like freezing in the Arctic, so it was like a really cold, creepy experience. The book, The Terror, is based on actual historical events and an actual expedition, the Franklin Expedition, which took place in the 1800s. And so that adds like a cool angle to it, because you can actually like read the actual story about it, and then also this fictional book.
My name is Rachel Celine, and I read a Hardy Boys book. It was the scariest book I've ever read. I read it when I was like 11, and these kids were getting kidnapped, and like they were taken care of, but they were trapped in like a basement because this person, he couldn't have kids. So he kidnapped them, and it was very scary because I'm just like, what if that happened to me?
My name is Billy Voss, and I'm going to introduce a picture book by Mary Ann Fraser called Heebie Jeebie Jamboree that my, at the time, 4-year-old son said was the scariest book I've ever brought home. And it is a book about two kids out trick-or-treating who have some mysterious tickets fly into their hand for a carnival called the Heebie Jeebie Jamboree. I got to about page 5 of the story, to where they had skeletal carousel ride by a headless jack-o'-lantern. And he shut the book on my hand and told me that was the worst book I ever brought home.
I'm Christina Yezdemir. A book that I found horrifying was Escape from Camp 14, One Man's Remarkable Odyssey from North Korea to Freedom in the West by Blaine Hardin. It's about a man who was born inside a prison camp in North Korea. It was horrifying to me what an oppressive life the people were forced into. Even their most basic freedoms, such as family connections and personal convictions, taken away. All that was left was basic survival.
I'm Steve Smith, operations manager at Siouxland Public Media. Book I'm going to recommend, I was, when you first mentioned scary stories, I was going to recommend Misery, but I figured, you know, Stephen King is on the radar of people who are looking for scary books, so I'm going to go instead with something a little bit kind of off the track. It's not really a spooky, like scary, like Halloween-y kind of a book, but it's absolutely horrifying. It came out in 2015 by a Nigerian-American author. His name is Uzodinna Awiala, and the book is called Beasts of No Nation. And it's, like I said, it's not a spooky October-like Halloween book. It's about actual horrifying things that actually happen. These things were kind of based on true events that happen in Central Africa, warlords and situations like that. And it's about this little boy who gets brought into this kind of cult by this warlord, and just all of the terrible things that he experiences and all of the terrible things he's forced to perpetrate on other human beings. It's shocking. You can read for chapters at a time and your jaw is dropped the entire time. It's awful. It's absolutely the most horrifying thing I've ever read.
Are you scared yet? What terrifies one reader can be completely boring to another reader. So how do we find that perfect scary story? One that will spook us, thrill us, and satisfy our need to be scared. We've invited Greg Windsor to talk with us today and help us figure it out.
Greg is a member of the Library Reads Board of Directors. and works as a reference librarian and reader's advisory specialist at the Johnson County Library in Overland Park, Kansas. Greg has presented at several regional library associations and comic book conventions, and lucky for us, he's a fan of the horror genre.
I've heard that Greg's to-be-read pile of books is taller than he is. Sounds like our kind of reader.
Welcome, Greg.
Thank you so much for having me on board. I'm really excited to talk about one of my favorite genres, horror.
So, Greg, what draws you to the horror genre, and what do you think draws readers in general to this genre?
Well, I personally have a theory about why people are drawn to horror. A lot of people don't like to admit that they like horror novels or would say, oh, no, I would never read, you know, anything like that. But yet, if you look around the popular culture at large, you see horror tropes everywhere. You see it in television, movies, podcasts, you know, comic books. Everywhere you turn, there's horror around us. But for whatever reason, horror novels really don't have that cultural cachet, maybe that like a Stranger Things or a Walking Dead, you know, TV show might have. And I always like to kind of spotlight that and say, if you like those other horror tropes, come to the horror portion of your library and you will find all sorts of fun stuff. One of my personal thoughts is that our brains are kind of hardwired for fear. It kept us safe back when we were first, like, starting off as a species, you know, back when we were hunter-gatherers. And even though we've progressed since then, you know, we think we progressed since then, but it's still something that all of us crave.
I would agree, and especially this time of year. So even those of us who don't read horror regularly, I always tend in the fall when the weather starts getting cool and you start to see the pumpkins and the decorations, like, I have, like, a craving for a scary book. Absolutely.
Absolutely. It's just something about the drop in the temperature, that it gets dark earlier. So, you know, you have that kind of feel of menace. It gets around, like, even if you leave work around 5 p.m, the sun's already starting to set. And there's nothing better than to kind of snuggle up with like a mug of tea or some coffee and kind of read a good book. And I can envision even our earliest ancestors telling stories around the campfire of the scary things that lurk, you know, behind every corner. And even when you're a kid, it's easy to imagine, you know, ghosts are real and things are just kind of lurking behind the scenes everywhere. So horror is kind of, like I said, all around us and something that we really instinctively are drawn to.
You know, you mentioned, you know, our ancestors. You know, we think about horror in a contemporary sense right now, but the horror genre really has evolved over time. Can you talk about that a little bit? How maybe what scares us has changed or how the genre has evolved?
Absolutely. The horror genre, the modern genre, is kind of traced back to the Gothic tradition that goes back even before, you know, what we maybe think of like a Gothic, like Mary Shelley or Edgar Allan Poe. Back in even the 1700s, there were books like The Castle of Otranto by Horace Walpole, about where these crumbling castles and where murder lurks around every corner and ghosts are kind of plaguing the protagonists. It's like all the creepy parts of Hamlet and Macbeth, you know, cranked up to 11. And this was a really strong and powerful genre that really that people were drawn to. And then that second generation of authors like your Poes and your Mary Shelleys. Mary Shelley was completely instrumental. Not only did she publish Frankenstein as like an 18-year-old girl, it was one of the first horror novels. It was also one of the first science fiction novels as well. And she spawned a bunch of imitators and kind of leading into that classic horror novel where you get like the Bram Stokers and the Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde and those types of books. And then that kind of leads us into the early 20th century where pulp magazines started to really proliferate. And if somebody ever really wants to write a really fascinating look of horror and even other genres like mysteries and comic books, the pulp fiction Renaissance of the early 20th century is a crucial part to look at because printing became cheap and filled newsstands and people just crave that content. And so there was a real opportunity for writers and editors to really push their stuff out there and make themselves known. And this is where your H.P. Lovecraft and Robert Bloch started writing and getting an audience. Ray Bradbury as well. So it was just a fascinating period that really kind of launched us into the 20th century, where kind of that traditional modern horror novels really started to kick off.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, a complex genre. You know, it's not really a one-size-fits-all. And I think sometimes we all get caught up in that. Like, this is what the definition of this genre is, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And there is a range. I like to talk about horror as a visceral genre, and along with, like, other genres like romance and thrillers. And if you look at the romance section of the library, there's kind of a continuum, right? There's kind of gentle romances that are very chaste and very sweet. And then on the other end of that extreme, there's fiction that's so steamy it'll fog up your glasses, right? Horror kind of works the same way. There's kind of this end of this kind of very kind of creepy and maybe atmospheric and menacing, where the thrills aren't quite as intense. And it's a great, you know, way to kind of dip your toe in and get that kind of feeling of menace and fulfillment from a good horror novel. And then on the other end of that continuum is the extreme edge that might chase some folks away, but is absolutely there for it. Your Clive Barkers, your Richard Laymans, your kind of more kind of violent, gory horror that there's absolutely a market out there for. And whatever place on that continuum that you are, the library is definitely going to have something for you that kind of scratches that itch.
So what are some of the questions that you ask a reader looking for a scary book recommendation?
Oh, absolutely. I love talking, first of all, about that intensity. Are there books that, you know, is there things that you kind of shy away from? Is intensity important? Are you looking for kind of a gentle, kind of a atmospheric read? Are you looking for that super intense experience? I always like to ask what your monster is, because most people think of horror in terms of monsters, you know, vampires or werewolves or ghosts or haunted houses. That's what most people kind of think of when they talk about horror. And one of the rules that I always like to tell myself is that patrons don't speak librarian. You know, we can think of terms. Yeah, we can think of things like reader's advisory and appeal factors and genres, and your patron just wants a good book. You know, they don't care about all of that stuff.
I love that question. What is your monster?
Absolutely, because some people like are drawn to werewolves or vampire novels. The era of the sparkly vampire novel is probably still is not quite gone. There's still fans out there. Haunted houses are kind of always an evergreen classic trope that kind of pulls in all sorts of folks from any sort of different genres. And I always love to have some good haunted house novels always at the ready to recommend to folks.
So this is probably going to be a tough question, but do you have an all-time favorite horror novel?
Yes, it is a tough question. Asking any librarian what their favorite novel is asking like what their favorite children are. You can't, there's just no way you could really differentiate. I will say that when I was a young kid, how I got into horror was when I would spend the night over at my grandparents' house. They would love to go to the local swap and shop, this open air kind of drive-in theater during the day. They'd have all these trucks come in and people would just kind of like, you know, almost like this big kind of open air flea market thing. I was fascinated by comic books. And so whenever I would go, I'd always look for like the comic book bins that are always these moldy, dusty cardboard boxes. And next to the comic books was always where these horror paperbacks were. And so the covers really kind of caught my eye, even as a young, like 8 or 9 or 10 year old. And I would kind of linger over them and I would like pick them up and kind of read, look at this lurid, you know, evil cover, and then flip and look at the back and read the spines. And I remember picking up Stephen King's Night Shift, which is a collection of short stories. And it was one of my first kind of introductions into the world of horror. And it was an ideal book to do because it's like 20 or some odd short stories. And so you really don't have to be really committed to a novel length scare. You know, you get something that's like 20 or 30 pages long that does its job and scares you, and then you move on to the next one. It's what really kind of introduced me to the genre. But if you're looking for another book that really pushes all my buttons, there's an author named Grady Hendrix, and he wrote a book called My Best Friend's Exorcism. And it takes place in the 1980s. And these two teenage girls are lifelong best friends, and they go to school together. One of them gets possessed, and it's almost like a metaphor for kind of growing apart, right? Your best friend starts acting strangely and starts hanging out with a bad crowd, and what's going on? And the main character kind of has to save or rescue her friend. And it's just a wonderful, sweet, almost sweet, horror novel. But it, I know you don't normally think of horror novels in terms of sweetness, but there you go. Also, another one I'd love to recommend to people is a book called The Murders of Molly Southbourne by Tade Thompson. It's a short book. It's like a novella. And the bit of that one is that the main character, Molly Southbourne, whenever she bleeds, whenever she sheds blood, a clone of herself erupts out of the ground and wants to kill her, you know, like a single-mindedly wants to kill her. So it's a almost like a psychological horror novel about almost killing parts within yourself. It's fabulous, and it's one of those books that you could just read in one setting. It's really a fabulous horror novel all the way around.
You said My Best Friend's Exorcism.
My Best Friend's Exorcism.
That one has
a fabulous book.
That is in my to be read list.
Oh, bump it up.
I'm going to have to bump it up. I definitely am. I've had it on the list. Even the cover just has that sort of 80s nostalgia. Sort of.
The cover is fabulous.
Yeah.
It's almost like it's presented in almost like one of those old VHS,
yeah,
you know, covers. You know, I love it. And anything he writes is fabulous. He wrote another one called Horror Store, where the horror novel takes place in a haunted IKEA store.
That's my worst
fabulous
nightmare.
And so, right? Exactly. Everyone's worst nightmare, trapped in an IKEA store overnight. But there's another one I read recently. Do you have room for one more?
Can I talk about one more? Yeah, please.
Okay, good. There's a book called The Invited by Jennifer McMahon.
Oh my gosh, I'm reading that right now. I'm not lying to you.
She really is. I've
that
seen
book
it.
Right now.
I've seen her reading it. She's not lying.
It is in my bag.
Okay, good. Well, I hope it's good.
Yes, but it is. It's kind of a slow burn.
Yes, it is.
You know,
but
and so I'm waiting for something more. That's my spooky read this year, so.
Okay. Yeah, that's a little bit more on the atmospheric side of things, where a couple kind of, you know, goes to the backwoods of Vermont and wants to build their dream house, and little do they know the area that they're in has a history of witches. And as they build their house out of, like, reclaimed wood and kind of local, you know, things, they realize that they're kind of assembling a haunted house, right? Every person knows a haunted house story where the innocent couple kind of moves into a haunted house, but what if you actually build one from the ground up, from the ashes of the disasters that came before? It's a fabulous book. And really,
I'm reading it, and I'm going, why would you do that? Why would you put this haunted thing in your house when you're building it? I know you like history, but why are you doing this?
I know. It's almost like, well, that's the thing. In every movie, there's the don't go into the basement.
Yeah.
Why are you going into the basement scene? That happens in horror novels as well.
And I do like the characters. And I keep trying to figure out how they're going to, you know, play. I know there's got to be like some kind of really great climax of scare that happens. So I'm almost there.
It definitely is. And it may not be for you. It may not completely, you know, come together for you. But if you want to stick with it, there's definitely great things to be had there.
Well, I'm 200 pages in. So since I made it past the first 50 pages, I'm in.
Okay, good. I noticed that some people who read books or read horror novels, they want to get pulled in instantly, like on page two. But sometimes you really have to set things up and really kind of get invested in these characters. Because if you don't care about the characters, then why would you care about them when a demonic clown starts chasing them around, right?
Right.
You
know,
an author really has to build that connection for you to care, or else it just becomes an exercise in, you know, silliness. And everybody's seen that horror movie where you just really what cares what happens to people in it, and then you're not invested. So a good horror novel, like a good romance, like a good thriller, will just deeply get those emotional hooks in you and then make you want to travel along with these characters.
I think that's a good point to make, too, that you talked earlier about horror being a visceral genre, because you maybe won't always remember the specific details of the book, but I think you always remember how it made you feel when you were reading it.
Oh, absolutely. And that's something that I like to bring not only to horror, but just to book recommending at large, because people will ask, oh, should I read this book? And the first thing a lot of people will do is tell you what happens in the book, right? Oh, you're going to love this because X, Y, and Z happens. And then you're like, why do I read it? You just already told me the entire book. But if you say how the book made you feel, that's going to be far more effective in getting a patron interested in a book. If you say, this horror novel had me on the edge of my seat, I literally, you know, had to stay up until 2 a.m. finishing it, that's going to really draw the patron in and really effectively communicate what the book is instead of just telling them what happened, which is just no fun at all, really.
So we know what I'm reading right now. So I'd love to know, what are you reading now, Greg?
Man, I am, well, like I said, I'm on the board of library reads, and what we do is kind of promote or help new books that are coming out kind of get recognized. And the problem with that is there's so many new books that come out every month, it's just impossible to keep ahead of it all. But I am reading a book called The Library of the Unwritten. I think it came out just a few weeks ago. But it's kind of a horror adjacent book. It takes place where there's this place in kind of hell, basically, where all of the books that were never written but were kind of thought about are stored, kind of like this library potential, right? And there's a librarian, because if you have a library, you have to have a librarian. And because these stories are all uncompleted and unfulfilled, they have a desire to get back to their owners, right, so they can become fulfilled. And so occasionally one of these stories, one of these books, escapes back to the real world, and the librarian has to come and corral the story and bring it back into hell. It's a book about libraries, so obviously I'm already in, you know, right there. But it's a lot of fun if you like stories about story, like Neil Gaiman or Aaron Morgenstern. This is going to be kind of a book that you're going to love, and that's something that I'm currently reading right now.
So you mentioned you're on the board of directors for Library Reads. What is that? Could you tell us a little more about what that is?
Sure. Apologies. I mentioned it and that I didn't even explain what that was.
We want to know more.
Because, you know, like, librarians know a lot more about it, you know, but it is like one of those resources that it's cool for people outside the library, too. It helps, you know, give them recommendations in a different way.
Publishers, what they do is publishers will release their books ahead of time for kind of, you know, booksellers and librarians and reviewers to kind of, you know, to write reviews for and also generate buzz, right? If I like something, I'm going to run off and tell all my book club people about it, for example. And what they want to do is kind of build that buzz. So whenever these publishers release the books, the librarians read them. And Library Reads, what they do is we accumulate the votes that librarians vote on. Say, oh, I really like this book. I didn't like this book. So Library Reads kind of assembles these votes from librarians across the country. And we assemble it into a monthly top 10 list of items that are coming out that month. And we release it not only to librarians, but to the general public. Anybody can access this at our website, which is at libraryreads.org. And the library that I work for, we're lucky enough to have a person who kind of handles all the buying of the books. But, you know, several libraries out there, you know, sometimes it's the person stocking the section is the person responsible for buying it. And so Library Reads is a good tool to kind of help people, librarians, know what kind of books that other librarians out there like and think that'll do well. And not only that, we have a Hall of Fame section. So it's no fun if the same author gets nominated for Library Reads over and over again. So we have a Hall of Fame section where after three kind of appearances on the list, you go to this Hall of Fame section to allow other people a chance to be on the list and be discovered. And meanwhile, you know, you're kind of spotlighted as always coming out with solid material. You know, James Patterson does not need our help. What we want to do is, he's fine on his own, but what we want to do is kind of spotlight those kind of emerging talents and maybe books and authors that you haven't heard of, but other libraries out there endorse.
And it is a very visual website. I think it's really easy to navigate. I had a lot of fun when I was on
Absolutely.
It.
Well, we're in the process of redesigning it. But yes, so you can actually print out the monthly lists, kind of like a flyer format. So if you're a librarian, you can print off a dozen and put them out there for patrons to look at and to see. So, yeah.
Well, thank you, Greg, for taking the time to talk with us today and sharing your love of the horror genre.
Absolutely,
I've definitely got more books to add to my to-be-read list now.
Yeah, I definitely do. We like to be able to talk to experts.
Yeah, well, my to-be-read pile is high enough, I have to curse other people to make their to-be-read piles just as high as mine. So I get something out of the experience as well. But thank you guys so much for having me on board. I hope you enjoyed the conversation and would love to come back at some point.
Thank you so much, Greg.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank you.
So, Kelsey, do you love to read horror novels or do you hate to read horror novels?
To be honest, I've kind of had a love-hate relationship with horror books. As a kid, I was really not into a lot of things scary, but also I kind of got the whole idea of scary books kind of give you that adrenaline rush, edge of your seat kind of feeling. So as a kid, probably one of the scariest ones, in my opinion, that I read was The Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, which I think they just made into a movie this year, last year.
They did. And it looked, the movie looked terrifying.
Yeah.
But not as terrifying as the illustrations that came in that original book.
Yeah. Those like weird, like watercolor, like ink blot, creepy. They were scarier than the stories themselves. I was like, oh, all right. I see where you're going there, Mr. Illustrator. It's terrifying. But then, you know, one that a lot of people wouldn't find scary, but I think is the one that I first remember reading was Benicula, because I thought, hey, how can you possibly have a sweet little bunny be a vampire bunny?
It was such a fun story. Fun, but, you know, there was a little edge to it, yeah, too. Especially for
I mean,
young
I read
readers.
It, you know, like, yeah, super young. So, of course, I thought it was terrifying, you know, not realizing, like, that's not really a super, like, quote-unquote horror novel. But as a young kid, it's kind of whatever terrifies you makes it a horror novel. How about you, Jen?
I remember reading The Dollhouse Murders by Betty Renwright and The Witches by Roald Dahl. Those both I found just creepy and a little bit menacing and, you know, like, ooh, this is a different kind of story. And, you know, there was a little thrill
to
like, reading
oh, them. Are my parents going to be mad if I'm reading this?
Oh, no, my mom let me read whatever I wanted to. She's like, oh, you're reading, whatever, it's fine.
Yeah, sure, do what you want.
Yeah, read away, child. And I think it was probably why I'm drawn to more gothic stories now, because there are tinges of kind of the bump in the night gothic storytelling in that book. Definitely one that I won't forget. I know a lot of people read Goosebumps. I've never read a Goosebumps book, and I feel kind of bad about that. But my son, when he was young, decided he was going to read Goosebumps, and he had nightmares about Slappy, the ventriloquist dummy. He was like, this is so creepy.
Like, I can't do that. I can't do it anymore.
And we've talked to people, you know, growing up who are just rabid fans of the Goosebumps series and excited to get the next one. And
it seems like that's always like the first thing like out of people's mouths or like, you know, predominantly is Goosebumps or, you know, something in that vein. And, you know, as you get into your teen years, you're almost an adult or, you know, we feel like adults. Kind of reading a book by Stephen King is almost this, like, rite of passage into the adult world of reading.
Absolutely.
So maybe you've been a fan of Stephen King since Carrie was published in 1974, or you finally tackled it after seeing the movie and even, you know, the recent readaptations of the movie. But chances are you can name multiple books written by Stephen King, and one of them could be the scariest book that you've read. In 2018, NPR did a poll asking people to nominate the scariest books they had read. Of the 7,000 nominations that came in, a little over 1,000 were for Stephen King. I mean, truly, he's the modern master of the horror genre. His latest book, The Institute, is one that fans and critics alike are both raving about. So, to kind of set the scene, in the middle of the night, in a house on a quiet street in suburban Minneapolis, intruders silently murder Luke Ellis's parents and load him into a black SUV. The operation takes less than 2 minutes. Luke will wake up at the Institute in a room that looks just like his own, except there's no window. And outside his door are the other doors, behind which are other kids with special talents, telekinesis and telepathy, who got to this place the same way Luke did. They are all in front half. Others Luke learns graduated to back half, like the Roach Motel. You check in, but you don't check out.
In this most sinister of institutions, the director and her staff are ruthlessly dedicated to extracting from these children the force of their extra-normal gifts. There are no scruples here. If you go along, you get tokens for the vending machines. If you don't, punishment is brutal. As each new victim disappears to back half, Luke becomes more and more desperate to get out and get help. But no one has ever escaped from the Institute. You know, just kind of like reading the publisher's description kind of like gives you those menacing, creepy chills like going up the back of your neck.
Absolutely. And the New York Times book review says that The Institute could be Stephen King's scariest novel yet.
But I think that every time that I read a Stephen King book, I'm like, oh, this is the scariest one.
I'm sure for horror fans, fans of Stephen King, most of you have probably already read this book or you might be on hold for it, but it's, you know, one that looks like it's worth our time.
But sure. I think it's unique that it's one of those that it doesn't have ghosts. It doesn't have, you know, vampires or like these diabolical entities, you know, of like demons or, you know, anything like that. But it still is that suspenseful and creepy and horrifying.
And so really, talent for writing terror must run in their gene pool. Stephen King's son, who goes by the pseudonym Joe Hill, has a new collection of short stories out titled Full Throttle. I read Joe Hill's first novel, Heart-Shaped Box, several years ago. It scared me just enough. It's very plot-driven, and I remember thinking, this would be a great movie when I read it. And I found out, after reading it and doing a little research, that Warner Brothers had bought the rights to it, but they haven't made a movie yet. I really wish they would. But
so frustrating when you like find out that they buy the rights and you're like, okay.
I've just been waiting.
Come on, where is the movie?
I think it'll be great. But I haven't come back to his writing until now, and I came across a recent author interview with Kirkus Reviews that really intrigued me. And reading their review for Full Throttle, it mentions the short story Late Returns. And it says, the most memorable story comes in Late Returns, in which an out-of-work trucker finds himself behind a bookmobile delivering volumes to denizens of the afterlife, most of whom owe late fees. As one such fellow tells him, the service he offers is something of a reward for returning overdue books in spite of the inconvenience of being dead. And I was like, So I was intrigued. So I read another review, and Publishers Weekly said, the ghostly, achingly poignant Late Returns is a love letter to librarians and a haunting exploration of the transformative power of grief. And I was hooked, and I had to read the story. So I checked out Full Throttle, and I started with the introduction, fittingly titled, Who's Your Daddy? I thought that was perfect. In the introduction, Hill talks about growing up with Stephen King as his father and how he tried and failed over and over again to find success as an author, kind of not being attached to his dad's work or his dad's name. And he failed many times until he didn't with his first short story collection. So it was just a fun introduction to kind of set the tone for the collection of short stories. But of course, I skipped right to Late Returns because it was in the middle of the book and I wanted to read it so bad. I loved it. I loved it. And I've been telling everybody about it over the last few days. And if you love libraries, it really is a love letter to libraries, librarians. The bookmobile is old and kind of creepy in the settings. I mean, it's definitely a ghost story, but it's beautifully written. The characters, they just really come to life, and it's probably ranks in one of my favorite short stories I've ever read. So I don't know if I'll go back and read other stories in the collection because I know they're going to be more menacing and more creepy and more atmospheric. And I don't know if I can handle that, but Late Returns was worth it. It's worth your time to read those 50 pages in the middle of that book. One of the things that Joe Hill says in the Kirkus interview is, I like to dream up someone interesting and get them into trouble. And I think that's one of the things that appeals to readers so much about Stephen King and now even Joe Hill's work. I'm a fan.
You want to find out, like, can they, you know, overcome this, or like, can they find a way out or solve this problem?
Because they're just ordinary people in ordinary settings doing ordinary things until something extraordinary happens or comes along.
So, are you all still thirsty for more?
Presented annually by the Horror Writers Association are the Bram Stoker Awards. They started in 1987 and are named after the author of Dracula. Horror Writers Association members vote to honor superior achievement in the area of dark fantasy, horror, and the occult. The 2018 winner of Best Novel was The Cabin at the End of the World by Paul Tremblay.
Which Kelsey did a check it out for.
Yes!
I love that check it out that you did, Kelsey. It's great.
It was a really good book, but I was also like, the whole time, like, okay, keep all the lights on while you're reading.
One of those books.
Yeah. Like, okay, don't turn the lights off. Read it during the middle of the day. Make sure it's nice and sunny out. These are all my ways that I can read horror without feeling like, okay, terrified. Like, somebody's going to come to get me.
You can also check out NPR's top 100 list. They did a poll we mentioned earlier of the top 100 recommended, you know, favorite scary stories. And they've got it broken down into some categories. And there's some fun reads there. Some, I think, a little more classic, but then also very contemporary. Mm-hmm. They've got a wide range of books on that list. Or, of course, you can ask your favorite librarian to match you with a monster. And I can't think of a better question to get this time of year. I would love for someone to come up and say, match me with a monster.
It would definitely take the, you know, traditional, you know, reference RA interview and be like, oh.
I'm like, I'm in. Let's do this.
So, of course, we can't close the podcast without sharing our own, you know, scariest books. So do you have a favorite scary book, Jen?
I have to say it's not a favorite, but the scariest book I ever read, it terrified me deeply. I will never, ever forget it. The horror of reading certain parts of this book was The Road by Cormac McCarthy. And I don't even think that's a traditional horror book. But if I didn't know what my monster was before, I figured it out very quickly reading this book. Spoiler alert, it's the end of humanity and what happens when people lose their humanity. You know, it kind of ends on a more redemptive note, but I have to say I don't know that I'd recommend this book for anyone unless they really ask me for like a bleak, apocalyptic survival story with cannibals. So if that's not your thing, don't check out that book, but it terrified me. For days, I wanted to talk about it with people because it bothered me so much, but...
It's kind of one of those books that you, like, love to hate. I'm not going to recommend it, but also, like, I need to talk about this with somebody, so, like, really, you need to read it, too, so that yeah. We can talk about it.
So it's not really a recommendation, but that is my scariest book that I've ever read.
Well, I didn't realize that, you know, my favorite scary story, or maybe the one that has haunted me the most, would kind of be in a similar vein to Jen's, but I think it was last year... When it first came out, I read The Hunger by Alma Katsu, which is a reimagining of The Donner Party, so kind of in that same cannibalism type vein.
I have seen that book on lots of lists. Yeah. I'm afraid of that book.
It was terrifying, yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I did it to myself, but it happened. Sometimes, you know, you gotta challenge yourself, I guess.
Sometimes you just have to explore those dark places. And I think that's one thing that horror writing can do. And then you stick it in a corner and you don't think about it until you...
Like, oh, do I have to remember that I read that?
That was that time.
Well, even just like the very beginning of like reading like the book jacket and the reviews, it was like, evil is invisible and it is everywhere. And I'm like, oh God, okay. Like I'm terrified, but also I kind of need to know more. Like it's so ominous. But that one is probably one of my all-time scariest. But also, yeah, cannibalism freaks me out too. So, I'm
like, so okay. Now you know we're monsters.
Yeah. Like apparently we can't deal with that.
But we'd love to hear from you. Drop us a line at first50pages@kwit.org and let us know your favorite scary book or what your monster is.
This is Kelsey.
And this is Jen.
And thank you for listening to the First 50 Pages.